From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
Beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we appreciate being joined by Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine. Julie, good day to you.
Happy 2020.
Yes,
I'm not 2020. Not going to say it with a Barbara Walters impression.
There's something about 2020. I go to write a check and I start to write 19, like 19 something, and I'm going 2020.
And you're supposed to write out 2020
on your checks. That's right, because otherwise people could mess with it or something.
I don't know what would happen if someone added a 17 after your 20.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or something, I don't know. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. 1920 or 2017. You're right.
Right.
Who knows? I don't know. I don't know how that works. I think my check blanks still have, they just have it for the 2 years. It still says 19 and then there's a blank.
Oh, right. Yeah. Or there used to be a little, I remember my mom, there used to be a little part on the check to the left. Didn't you tear it off?
Oh, what, you tore it off. Stub.
The little stub. Yeah, and what were you supposed to write on the little stub?
Yeah, that was.
What the amount was. So you didn't remember. You have like the copy of the check.
Well, I don't.
Which I don't do that.
I don't do it. I can't stand carbon copies.
Yeah, I don't do that. But you can do it. They can offer it.
Yeah,
yes.
I remember those little stubs. They looked very irritating. That was before. you go to pick up a prescription, date of birth. They went to date of birth, and you can see people kind of mumbling over the year. I'm waiting for them to say, which millennium was that in, sir?
Yes.
Because I just give the year. You give the.
Although people are living longer, so yeah. Comparatively, you're sort of a youngster. At least that's what I tell myself.
That's what I tell myself, too. I love the, we're made in the image and likeness of God. And at 6 in the morning, when I look in the mirror, I go, God looks like this.
Right.
I don't think so.
I hope not. a little radio makeup always helps.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. I've done some TV work in sports. And I'm live college football.
Oh, okay, sure.
And you have to do makeup, literally, and they say, Bob's forehead is glowing, we need to get some powder on I did it for a number of years, but then there was a gap, and it was like 10 years later, I was doing it again, and the same thing, his forehead's glowing. So I said, it's my halo.
Oh.
But, and extensive. I mean, they're working on you for an hour.
Wow.
And you're thinking, are we really making a difference?
I don't know. I guess for the viewers.
I guess.
How many shots didn't they have of you in the broadcasting booth? Weren't most of the shots on the field?
Yeah. We would do what they call an open, where the person I work with most frequently was Walt Gray. He would do the play-by-play, and I'd do the color. And they'd have us out in the stands 3 hours before the game, just discussing the game.
For
5 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And then we'd be up in the booth, and maybe at halftime, maybe right at the start for about 30 seconds. Well, Bob, what do you think is going to happen?
Yes, and then at halftime, kind of a recap.
Yeah, but usually they'd catch you with a hot dog on your mouth or something because you had 5 minutes to grab lunch, But other than that, you weren't on. Yeah. It was just your voice. You may as well be doing radio.
Yes.
But they still put a lot of makeup on.
Oh, okay. Wow.
More on me than on Walt.
Okay.
So, So radio, we don't have to go through all that makeup
stuff. Yeah, that's good.
There was a time a few years ago where our whole family was on Anderson Cooper's.
Oh yes, show. I recall that. Yeah.
And again, makeup, and the kids thought it was so much fun. They were I think our
was
our
that when he was, had a talk show?
Yeah, he had a talk show. Oh, he had a daily talk show, like 11 to noon kind of thing.
Okay, that one didn't last too long.
On CNN. Yeah, he was on two or three years, I think, of that. Okay. And he was doing the other.
He was still doing CNN at night.
At night, yeah. And I think it just got to be too much for him. I think it was actually a fairly popular show because he was pretty topical. It wasn't some of the daytime stuff. It was he was pretty topical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our youngest was about a third grade, and he's getting he's a little boy too. You know, he's all this makeup on him.
Yeah.
They all thought it was a real kick. Yeah. So.
Well.
Anyway.
I say stick with radio and
stick
print.
With radio. Get the perfect face for radio. Yeah.
Would you like to talk about this issue of
Harold May? I think we're out of time.
We're out of time? Okay.
We are looking at and talking about people that don't need me. You got four outstanding individuals on the cover here.
Yes, young adults on the cover of our January-February issue, which for all of our years of publishing, always focuses on Hatlet education,
right.
Since at the end of January is Hatlet Schools Week.
Right, and we should emphasize that each edition has a theme.
Usually has a theme, yes. Mm-hmm. And most of the feature stories kind of revolve around that theme.
Right.
And so our cover story for January, February is, Do Hatlet Schools Really Matter? Young Adults Say Yes. And I myself had the privilege of talking with three of these four young adults that we feature. And Patrick Joyce, one of my writers, also spoke with one of the four. And so we have Patrick Artwellis of Vallejo, and he's actually at Holy Spirit Parish, Fairfield. Amayali Chavez of St. Peter All Hallows Parish, mm-hmm. here in Sacramento. Eric Jackson, who was born and raised in Sacramento, is now living across the street from St. Dominic Parish in San Francisco on Bush Street. Mm-hmm. And Robin Williams, who is a member of St. Mary Parish in Sacramento, and she's also, I believe, the theology department chair at St. Francis High School in Sacramento. So what they all have in common is they're all graduates of Hatlet Schools,
mm-hmm.
and actually all four of them attended all 12 years of Hatlet Schools.
Oh, wow.
And so we wanted to get their take on why Hatlet Schools mattered to them, how it influenced their lives. A little bit of the background on this, too, is that the studies that have been done by the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate at Georgetown show that among millennials, those are generally thought to be young adults that were born since 1982, although there are subgroups within that, I think Gen X and Gen Y, and there's even subgroups among that, so I'm not going to go into all the subgroups.
I have to ask my kids,
too old
to go
into all those subgroups.
Their favorite expression now is, hey, boomer.
Oh, hey, boomer?
Yeah.
Okay, I think I'm barely in the boomers. Wasn't boomers from 60 or 65?
I'm the original boomer.
Oh, okay. What year? Oh, I can't ask you what year that started, but it was before 1960.
They came home from World War II.
Oh, those were the boomers.
They all had kids.
Oh, those? I thought the boomers were younger than that.
No, that was the baby boom right then.
Oh,
yeah.
There's boomers and baby boomers?
Yeah, then there's baby boomers.
Oh, I think I'm a baby boomer. I think that was from 1960 on.
Yeah. But it was called the baby boom, which was all these guys came back from the war.
That's true.
So if you were born a year or two after the war...
Yes.
And they kind of extend it, but if you were born a year or two after, you were a boomer.
So the millennials, roughly from 1982 on. So we might be talking like, I don't know, 18 or something to 38. Some might be a little older.
How do you find these people?
Actually, it was not easy. I was hoping we would not go into that.
Yes.
We used with the help of our Hatlet Schools department, we reached out to high schools, mostly reaching out to high schools. We reached out to elementary schools, although the elementary schools are doing a much more thorough job now, I think, of connecting with their past alumni, as it is important for them. Right. The high schools, I think, have always had a tradition of, you know, strong alumni associations. Right. So we reached out to various. I asked a lot of people around. And so part of this issue a little bit, and I'll get into that, is I also have an interview with Bob Hardy. I don't remember you had him on the show when he had the symposium here about the disaffection of young people from the Catholic Church. So I do have an interview in this magazine with him. But one of the things about millennials, as we know, is that they may not be attached to any particular parish.
Right.
A lot of them are not registered in any parish. A lot of them aren't necessarily attending Mass regularly. That's actually among the whole Catholic population. Sure. We can't just single out millennials.
Sure. In my generation and other generations, you say, well, what's your parish? Boom, right off the bat.
Yes.
You say what your parish is. Whereas with a lot of young people, even those that go to Mass, you're right. A lot of them aren't identifying with a parish. They're not registered.
There. And that's actually a difficult problem with our magazine as far as circulation, because we're dependent on who registers in parishes.
Right.
So if you never register, then we have no way of getting you the magazine.
I think part of that is
for anything, the annual Catholic appeal, you know, anything that the diocese would connect with individual parishioners about.
As much as you hear that people want to belong and join, I sense this almost a rejection of, I don't want to be labeled. I don't want to be a part of a group officially. I'm happy to go to Mass, but I don't want to, I don't want to register because you hear it in a lot of the traditional service groups that, and not just Catholic, but all these different service organizations that they're aging and they don't have the 20 somethings coming in to replace them.
Yes.
It's like, I'm happy to volunteer and do this, but I don't want to officially be a member of the something.
Well, I don't know. I it's hard to generalize, but I guess maybe commitment is looked at differently, or commitment to what we might call an institution. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to, but maybe some people look at the church as an institution and not as a community of believers. So maybe that's a problem. Yeah. A problem also.
Yeah.
But anyway, I learned a lot sharing and talking with these young adults. Let me just briefly touch on some of the things they said. Amma Yali is 21 years old. She just, and maybe you might have the chance to have some of these young adults on the show as we've been doing. She just graduated last year from St. Mary's College. She's also a graduate of Christian Brothers. So she's had, since St. Mary's is run by the Christian Brothers, she's had 8 years of De La Salle-inspired education, and she actually said the five core principles of LaSallian schools have really shaped her own faith and morality, her personal views. Those principles are faith in the presence of God, respect for all persons, inclusive community, quality education, and concern for the poor and social justice. She's one of three children on the elementary level. She went to a few different schools because there were mergers of schools in the area. So she actually graduated from St. Patrick's Academy in Sacramento. But prior to that, she attended St. Peter's School, which eventually evolved into John Paul II School. So she had three different elementary schools. She's the first in her family to graduate from college. And we have a nice picture here with her mother, Annabelle, who came to the photo. So I told her parents, actually her father was going to be there, and then he had to work at the last minute, so he wasn't able to be pictured in the photos. But So she talks a lot about growing up in a bilingual, bicultural home, mm-hmm. the influence of her parents on her faith. She does say during high school she had some doubts about her faith. She said, sometimes I had doubt and uncertainty. Am I doing okay? Am I on the right path? When I had doubts, I would ask, is God real? I would pray, but not always feel I was getting answers. And then she went to St.
Join the club.
Join the club, yeah. So she went to St. Mary's College, was thrilled about that in Moriah. Hmm. And she served as a resident advisor, what they call a LaSallian peer minister, very involved with student liturgies and prayer groups, cultural programs. She shared with me that her most memorable experience came during her junior year on the month-long semester break. She had the chance to go to Naples, Italy, for a LaSallian service internship where she lived and worked with the Christian Brothers at Casa Arco Baleno in the Sabmia urban area of Naples.
Wow.
This was their mission to help at-risk teen boys who've dropped out of school. And she also helped at a local daycare run by the Sisters of Providence.
Wow. Boy, what an experience.
Yeah. She said, she says, I found the meaning of living and serving in your faith. It was a moment where I was truly close to God. I found so much of myself in this group of boys who didn't come from wealthy families and were trying to find hope that their lives could be better. I let them know they could do what they wanted to do, that the sky's the limit. All my life, I had been taught that I could do anything to have faith and God will provide. She shared with me, I didn't share all of it, but these were young boys, maybe who had gotten in trouble in their teen years, went to this program run by the Christian Brothers.
Wow.
But she sensed in the young boy, in the teens, that they felt like, because they had done something, you know, I don't know if they'd broken the law or truant or whatever right. they had done, that they had kind of lost all self-esteem and were lacking mm-hmm. in hope, thinking, well, I put myself
right.
on the wrong path here. I can't recover right. from that. Yeah. So.
Boy, that's a challenging.
Yeah.
Ministry.
She also had the chance, I didn't include it here, but she also had the chance to travel to Rome, I believe, to whatever the I think they call it the generalate or whatever the main headquarters mm-hmm. would be at the Christian Brothers, mm-hmm. and they have a chapel there. And she wow. said she had a moment to pray there and thank God for, you know, all the blessings she had received. Her parents really
so
had to sacrifice a lot.
He just took his time.
Yeah. really, their parents, she shared, really have had to sacrifice a lot to pay for. She and I believe she has two younger siblings who are also going through Catholic schools. So she really is appreciative of her parents' sacrifice.
And I just, I keep hearing nothing but good things about St. Mary's.
Oh, college. Yeah. Yeah, so she had a very inexperienced there. I asked each of them, as we're on the, we in another part of the magazine, we're all on this subject about young people disaffiliating with the church. And, mm-hmm. You know, the median age of that, really, when they tune out, is 13. Some
wow.
people were surprised about that.
13.
But the research shows that,
grade.
And this is the most, we can get into that when we talk right. about the interview with Bob McHardy, but that, that research by St. Mary's Press and that came out a year and a half ago, that's the median age when young adults say they disaffiliate and tune out.
That's not even a young adult.
No, it is not. These are young adults who are interviewed as
right,
young adults,
right.
but they're asked, you know, when did you disaffiliate?
I would have guessed, like, when they go away to college kind of thing.
That's you know? What most people thought, and it's really not the case, at least, and this is the most extensive study that's been done. And it's quantitative, but it's also a qualitative of asking their opinions
right.
and, you know. So anyway, Abba Yahweh says, I asked each one of them, what would you say to other young adults who might be questioning their faith? And I found the answers extraordinary and different for each
right.
person who responded. She says, to other young adults who may be questioning their faith, I say, don't worry, have hope, and find your own faith, because God will always be there for you. Your faith is something no one can take away from you. It's the strongest thing you have. It will guide you wherever you go in life. It will protect you in your moments of greatest fear and comfort you in your greatest sorrows.
Wow.
So, then I also spoke with Eric Jackson. He's a native of Sacramento, went to St. Francis of Assisi School here in Midtown. Mm-hmm. He's living and working in San Francisco, just got engaged. And he has been involved in the young adult ministry in the Archdiocese of San Francisco, helping to organize events for young Catholic professionals. He says his commitment to serving others was really ingrained in him from Catholic schools. But he also said, his true understanding and practice of the faith didn't come until more after his 12 years of Catholic education. Oh. It was more when he was involved in peer groups, prayer groups, other groups with young adults as a student at Boston College, which is a Jesuit school. Yeah, he also graduated from Jesuit High School.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he says the challenge for Catholic schools today is not only to instill these universal values of compassion for others, values held even by the secular world, but to truly teach children about the doctrines of the church and to form them as knowledgeable practicing Catholics and ultimately future saints. Nothing else matters more than becoming a saint. So,
amen to that.
At Jesuit had the chance to encounter, he says, the great thinkers of the Western world, Plato, Aristotle, St. Thomas Aquinas, opened himself up to the great philosophical and theological traditions. He was also involved in many service projects. But he said he really felt the peer groups at Boston College were amazing for him. I met other faithful, devout Catholics who taught me more about the sacraments and the liturgical life of the church. And so he recently got engaged. In fact, his fiancée, Andrea, they met in the young adult ministry, and he actually shared with me that he proposed to her a few months ago at Mission San Rafael, where they had their first date. And he's a linguist. He has a master's, I believe, in linguistics, a bachelor's degree in philosophy and theology. So he works for Salt Branding in San Francisco. He's a linguist and a brand strategist. I found interesting, I asked him if his co-workers asked him questions about his faith. And he says, my desk is covered with crucifixes and icons, so people know I'm Catholic. Some co-workers have questions about the faith, or they share a story with me. I'm very much into expressing who I am and not ashamed of the Lord or the cross. Our goal as Catholics is not just to be an in-club. Our mission as we leave Mass is that we are sent out into the world. I pray that I can evangelize even in the context of a secular job.
Very good. Good for him.
And he says his advice to young Catholics who might be estranged from their faith says, I ask them a very simple question using words from the Lord himself. The first words Christ utters in the Gospel of John occur after he was baptized in the Jordan. He simply says to the two disciples following him, what do you seek? So I say to other young adults, what are you looking for? What do you want? What do you long for? Is it community? Is it friendship? Is it human connection? Beauty, love. If you long for these things, I invite you to come hang out with me and my friends. Come to the church, which is the source of all those things.
Wow.
So as you see, I'm not getting some sort of standard patent answer when I ask them this, am I?
You got the superheroes of the church.
So
that's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes you hear this is... people just want to be invited. Like, how nice of you.
Yeah.
I'd love to come to your church.
Well, and we'll get into this again when we have talked about this interview with Bob Hardy, right. Because the whole headline there is, it's a belonging issue, it's not a belief issue.
Uh-huh.
That's what some of the research shows.
I wonder where Eric Jackson got that tie.
What is that tie?
It's a really attractive tie.
Oh, it's not a Christmas tie, is it?
No, it's,
no, it's like a flowery. Yes. And we've got some. Three of the four were nice enough. I asked them if they had a picture that you'd be to share from their younger days. So, which was not all that long ago, but. And they're still young. So Robin Williams, Patrick Joyce, one of my writers, spoke with her in this interview. And she attended St. Mary's School. She's come full circle. She's a parishioner now at St. Mary's. She and her husband, and I believe her, I can't remember if she has a son or a daughter, and they have a three-year-old son. Here it is, Jude, and she's expecting a daughter in March, so pretty soon here. And so Robin attended St. Mary's and St. Francis. She went on to earn a bachelor's degree in humanities and religious studies at Sac State, as well as a master's degree in liberal arts. She's been at St. Francis since 2007. When she returned to teach there as a long-term substitute in the English department, and as chair of the theology department, she now teaches social justice to seniors and the sacraments and interfaith dialogue to juniors. She says, being able to express my faith as my profession is a blessing every day. To talk about God, to learn from others, to pray, to go to Mass is such a blessing. I sort of fell into it, but it was part of God's plan for me. And she says, in our modern culture, much of it is consumer-driven and about the individual. We hear messages that go against the deep meaning of Christian matrimony, about self-sacrifice and the love of another person. When you sway toward where the culture is leading, you miss the deep fulfillment marriage brings. If I'm really trying to spend my life understanding God's love and emulating God's love, then marriage is the perfect way for me to attempt that pursuit. So, as I said, she grew up in St. Mary Parish. She's been active in ministries there. She said she has taken a step back a little bit with having her three-year-old. She says it's hard. You can't go up and serve as a Eucharistic minister and leave a three-year-old in the pew.
I can relate.
I'm sure you can relate to that. Her message for Catholics of her age who no longer practice the faith is, I don't want to put my own experience on anyone else, but this is what I would miss out on. Definitely a sense of community. That's especially true in a world where people are so much into their own lives and worlds and phones. That comes up a lot. They miss what community brings to your life. Support when you need it and joy when you are celebrating. I don't experience being a part of the body of Christ means you're connected to everyone. I don't experience the fullness of that if I'm not praying, if I'm not going to Mass, not receiving the Eucharist. Then I would not be deepening my faith. I would be at a standstill. It's like exercise. You get out of shape spiritually. Thought that was it.
That's a good analogy.
And then finally, our fourth young adult in this story, we have Patrick Artwellis, who's 29. He is a 2004 graduate of St. Catherine of Siena School in Vallejo and a 2008 graduate of St. Patrick St. Vincent High School. Also in Vallejo. And he says he formed the habit of going to Mass in Catholic school. That was a large influence on him, attending Sunday Mass at the parish. He also was a handle bearer for 4 years in elementary school, assisting at Masses. He says in his elementary school and everything, we were taught how to treat people with respect. We studied the Ten Commandments in Scripture, plus the parts of the Mass and social justice. Those gave me the background and understanding of my faith from a young age. I understood this is how Jesus taught and treated people and how we were to do the same toward others. He was very involved in campus ministry in high school, and then he discerned that he wanted to be a seminarian for the Diocese of Sacramento, which he was for a few years. He attended Mount Angel Seminary, I believe.
Yeah, up in Oregon.
In Oregon. And he said he was influenced by his own pastor, Father William Hanan, who's retired now, and also Fathers Tanessa and Joel Janamia, who are current priests for us, who in his high school years, they were chaplains at St. Patrick, St. Vincent, and also Father Brian Atienza, who was director of vocations. He really appreciated that his teachers and counselors were always open to questions for him and discussion and exploration. But ultimately, he studied for 4 years at Mount Angel, got his bachelor's degree in philosophy. He was one semester at St. Patrick's Seminary in Menlo Park, then discerned that the priesthood was not his calling. He says, I thank God that he allowed me to have so many great experiences as a seminarian and to meet other wonderful and amazing men. I'm still friends with my classmates who are now priests. But he says, with much prayer and discernment, I realized that God was calling me to marriage and to fulfill my vocation as a layperson. So he now works from home in Vallejo for Cisco. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you what this is, but it's something high-tech, global technology enablement lead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
do you have the English translation for that?
That's it. And he's engaged to Amber Grace Castro, who is a music teacher at Holy Spirit School in Fairfield, and that's where they are members, and they're going to be married there later this year. And they're very involved in the music ministry there. So I asked him, what about young adults who might be disaffiliated with the church? He says, most important, the church needs to be welcoming. My invitation to them is, if I can show you a church that is much greater in its love than you have experienced, would you be open to it? Can we offer a welcoming church that doesn't pressure, is non-judgmental, and speaks the truth in a slower and not as aggressive way? He says, almost all the people in my life have said yes to God, and I say yes also. I've always looked for God in the people who I trusted and who were exemplary models of faith. If it weren't for my teachers, priests, youth group leaders, and colleagues who I listened to and lean on, then I definitely would not be where I am now and who I am now.
Wow.
So
these people are
everybody so, answered that.
So well spoken.
Yeah. Everybody answered that a little differently, yeah, based on their own experience, which
exactly
is what you would expect. But,
So tremendous faith-filled experiences.
All of them, yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I enjoy that you have pictures when they're younger and then currently. Eric Jackson's picture as a 3rd grader or something?
Yes, and I think, doesn't say that. I think
adult picture.
Yeah.
Just says as a student.
Oh, okay.
It looks like about a 3rd grader.
Yeah.
Judging by the backpack.
Yes.
Which is bigger than the kid. And I'm going, they don't look like the same person.
Right.
Whereas others you go, oh, yeah, I can see that. But
Patrick looks similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so that was great.
Anyway, I thank those 4 young adults for sharing as not, you know, we actually, we asked more than those 4. Then we couldn't we couldn't do 10. But, some were, didn't necessarily want to speak about their faith and have it printed in the magazine.
Right.
You know, that's a personal choice. But I'm certainly appreciative to these 4 that would allow their their opinions and their reflections and their thoughts to be shared.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. It's a great read. We're with Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour and Julie Sly right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, this is Laura Lynn, Assistant Director for Lay Formation, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks for that, and welcome back, everyone. Julie Sly is our guest. She is the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine, one dedicated this month to Catholic schools. Do Catholic schools really matter? Young adults say yes, and profiles four very compelling stories.
Yeah, it was really
inspires my faith.
Yeah, really, that they were able to talk so freely and not, you know, I'm not that I didn't hardly have to do anything, but it was I had to write the stories. Okay,
yeah.
but. Just talking to all of them and their experiences was great to see how all of them individually express themselves. So I'm going to move on to, we also have an interview with Bob McHardy, and he was here in our diocese around the days of ministry days in September, and he actually came a day early and came, gave a symposium for about 200 250 Catholic school teachers, laity and religious, about the disaffiliation of young Catholics from the Catholic Church. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a study that's been done by St. Mary's Press titled Going On, The Dynamics of Disaffiliation in Young Catholics. Mm-hmm. And Bob was one of the researchers. He's been decades in ministry in parish, school, diocesan, and national settings. He's still working in ministry. He's also adjunct faculty at the Catholic University of America and the University of Dallas. I've asked him some questions here. And we've also got a link in the magazine if you want to go to their website and actually read more specifics on the whole study. I think the point of this was to, and Lincoln Snyder, our superintendent of schools, asked him to come and give this symposium, I think along with our Office of Family and Faith Formation, to really inform our parish leaders, teachers, about the specifics of this groundbreaking study. So I asked him, what are some of the most surprising and new results from the study? Mm-hmm. He says, first, as I mentioned before, we don't have a belief issue, we have a belonging issue. That's significant because it shifts our approach to pastoral ministry with the young church. The starting point becomes belonging, not believing. It's affective, not cognitive. That's going to be hard for some people to hear because there's some voices that will say the real issue is our young people don't know enough about the faith. Mm-hmm. And if they knew more, they would want to meet Hatlet and be disciples of Jesus. He says, I maintain that until they feel they are welcomed and they belong, they don't want to hear about Jesus. It's a different approach, but you get in the same place. Second, there's
I can argue with some of that, but I can see his point as well.
Yeah. He's saying we need to think out of the box.
Yeah.
That's also to what young people are reacting to in the culture. A lot of it's social media. You know, there's many factors that have made the landscape, I think, different than it might have been 20 years ago. He also says, second, this is from the study now, there's no single reason why many young people raised as Catholics no longer identify with the church. Mm-hmm. And this was from there was no one thing. We can't say it's because they hated homilies, right, or it's because there wasn't a youth group, or you know what I'm saying. There was no, from the study, and these were very in-depth interviews with 240, I believe, roughly, young adults. There's no one profile that adequately describes those who have left the church. Rather, there were myriad reasons and paths that led young people to disaffiliate from the church. So he says, when I go out and address audiences, they'll say, please tell me the three things we need to do and we'll do them. He says, there are no three things. That's the problem. We need to listen to what young people are telling us. When we ask them why they leave, we hear a spectrum of reasons. So the challenge then, he says, how does the faith community pass on the faith to the next generation? It's not about the young people themselves. They are a barometer of what is going on in the wider culture. And then one of the things he didn't say in the symposium, too, is what if a parish, let's say 50 people from a parish committed to just having contact with one young person and saying, do you have a question about your faith? I'd like to accompany you. Uh-huh. You know, of course, it's into a little bit of a murky area, given the fact of our culture and you know, and adults be alone with somebody, with somebody else's child. You know, that's kind of immediately what came to mind for me.
Right.
But anyway, maybe you can do it with people who are over 18 and not minors. So anyway, 30 says, we asked young people, at what age did you stop identifying as Catholic? Our sample was young adults who walked away from the church. It's important to phrase it right because the median age is 13.
That's just mind-boggling.
What that says to me is we have had young people sitting in our pews, in our Catholic schools, and our youth ministry programs who have already checked out. Sometimes in the interviews with them, their parents don't even know that. That was stunning and a little scary. So I couldn't include, I mean, he went, you know, just for the sake of... you know, keeping it to a couple pages in the magazine. I had to edit some out. But one of the things he said was he and his wife for years have taught the confirmation classes at their parish, which I believe is outside of Baltimore. I don't remember the name of the parish. But he said, compared to 10 years ago, I have kids who come in and say, hi, I'm Tom. I'm an atheist.
Wow.
On the first introduction. Or, hi, I'm Susie. I don't really believe in this anymore, but my parents are making me come.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, the parents can make you come. The parents can make you come to Mass. But the key, and you don't want to make them believe. You want them to believe.
Yes.
You know, I insist that you believe doesn't create belief.
No. You know? You have to experience it.
You need to pray for that grace.
Yeah. So another question I asked him, one of the things he talked about was if you're in a work with young people today, teachers, you know, religious education, faith formation people, that you have to be okay with chaos. You're not okay. But then he flipped it around and said, God creates things out of the chaos. So don't think everything has to be organized and structured. You can live with a little bit of chaos. And so one of the things I said, what should parishioners and youth ministers do? He says, I think we need to adjust our ministry whole maps. I'm concerned that some people in church ministry have narrow images of leadership. If leaders think their job is to be the, quote, doer of all ministry for people, then it turns people into sheep, consumers of ministry. If parishes take seriously the challenge to connect with our young people, the role of the pastoral leader is to mobilize the entire faith community on behalf of our young people. When I ask people to, and he did this in the symposium, when I ask people to identify someone who has walked away from the church, almost everybody can. Everyone knows a family member, neighbor, friend, or student in our parish or school who's no longer connected to the church. That recognition makes disaffiliation a community problem and a community challenge. We need to identify what the faith community can do and how we can respond. And he said this has to be different for every parish community. Mm-hmm. What might work for a suburban parish might not work for an inner city parish, and vice versa. So he feels youth ministry needs to be increasingly intergenerational, moving beyond just age segment ministry. For young people to form relationships with faith-filled, caring adults. And that's sort of true. We all think, Matt, if we didn't have someone a little bit more mature than us modeling their faith, you know, I'm sure we can all cite people even beyond our own immediate family who were role models for us in their faith.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you know, family members frequently have a harder time.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You know, I'm really happy that when my kids visit Aunt Mary, I know she's going to Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And they revere her.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, oh, Aunt Mary's going to Mass.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's different town, different church, different parish.
Yeah.
Not different church, different parish.
Right.
Just a Catholic church, but you know, and that's very beyond. It's comforting. It's great role modeling. It's somebody they admire, and she's doing what Mom and Dad tell me I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that kind of picks up on the other thing that he mentions here is that they very much say. He's using the language of accompaniment, which Pope Francis has talked about a lot. What would it mean for us as a faith community if we committed to walk with our young people on their faith journey? Well, where we don't determine the destination, but we walk with them.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a degree of humility and probably patience and perseverance. I'm convinced that if we approach this issue with the mindset of recruitment, or we're going to bring them back, they will see that from a mile away and know it's not sincere. That is as opposed to the idea of accompaniment, which means we walk with them. If we become the kind of community that's willing to walk with our youth and young adults on their spiritual journey, then we become the kind of community they want to be a part of. I'm convinced it would energize the whole parish. They would go from being spectators in the church to participants. And it's kind of what Jesus did, right? He walked with people wherever he met them, whatever their particular situation is. So one of the first objectives was we want to know every kid by name. My experience is, and this is true for adults, if you don't know their name, it's easier to walk away. And you create opportunities to listen to their story. There's a difference between listening to understand and listening to respond. And you suspend judgment and listen to their words and their concerns. That's part of accompaniment. So it's a challenge they're putting out there.
He's right, though, about they're going to see right through you if they think you're out there on a fishing expedition.
Uh-huh.
Even though we're fishers of men.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's got an agenda.
Yeah.
He's not interested in me. He's not interested in what I'm thinking. He's got an agenda.
Yeah.
And anything that doesn't fit that agenda, he's going to challenge me on.
Yeah.
You know, it may work with some people, but it's not going to work with most people.
Yeah.
I think he's got a good point.
Yeah. So, anyway, I hope people read that. There's certainly more online you can go and read, and I don't have the study in front of me, but there are summary, or as they present the study results, there are, as I recall, four or five groups that, even though there's not one single reason why young people disaffiliate, they were able to put some into some categories, you know, of similarities. And also, I think it's important for the schools and the parishes, and this was shared in the symposium, they don't, as he said, they don't give, here's the things you need to do that will work. Rather, they pose questions that you can ask to your parish community and your school or the communities, you know, one parish. What are some of the things we need to explore? Yeah. So we also have a story about St. Ignatius Parish and School, reflecting a little bit relating to this study. Now, I spoke with Father Michael Moynihan, who's the pastor, Patty Hoches, who's the principal, and they talk a little bit about how they're trying to take some of the results in from this recent study and see what kind of an impact or things they might be able to change in the parish and school to address disaffiliation. Mm. So, one of the things there is that they've had a dedicated young adults ministry for a long time. And they have coffee house events where young adults share in fellowship. They offer retreats. They also offering other opportunities and welcoming spaces for young adults to participate in all liturgical ministries. And this is something that's also encouraged with the students as they're going through the school and also the parents. Father Moynihan, reflects many of our school parents are a bit older than the young adult range, but some are young adults who share similar challenges as expressed by the young adults in the study. He says, we see numerous examples today where young people are capable of such great good. We have to look at that, haul it out, find ways to let them channel their beliefs. He's saying that the study results, what they found, this is a wonderful opportunity, not something that has to paralyze us. It's something we need to be aware of and responsive to in our community. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things in the past are kind of a commonly held assumption was, when people get married, and they have hints, they're in a comeback to some of their traditional things and that. And I think we see some of that, but I don't think the results of, I'm not the expert, but I don't think the results of this study would necessarily indicate that if there's this disaffiliating at such a young age, I don't know. Have something bring them back to wanting to belong.
I know there are some that maybe have disaffiliated, but still have the strong belief, and they'll bring the baby back and have the baby baptized because they think that's their duty as a parent.
Mm-hmm. But there's no continuation.
Because there's a long gap between a baby being baptized and First Holy Communion. You know, and it's like, oh, well.
Or first Eucharist and communion and confirmation.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, well, that's where if you talk to faith formation, people will say, if we can keep them from second to seventh or eighth grade, that'll be great.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's interesting. I've been around the holidays driving around for whatever errands and all that. I've seen at least two churches that said, we have services after Christmas.
Yeah.
One was Episcopal, and I don't remember what the other one was. You know, just on their sign out front where that they change it.
Sure.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. We have continuing services after Christmas, 8 and 11 a.m.
Oh, that's funny. It's funny, but it's not funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indeed. Julie?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we didn't cover everything, but that gives you a taste of what's in this issue.
Bishop Soto, it's an election year, and his column is in here, and he says good citizenship is more than a matter of voting or texting, a really profound a column, very, very much.
As usual, it gives people a lot to walk away from his column and think about.
Yes.
And act on. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if you don't get the printed issue, you can look at the digital edition on the diocesan website, scd.org. And we have all our past issues. If you want to do a lot of reading, you can read all the past issues there.
And some wonderful stuff, too, about the annual Catholic appeal.
Annual Catholic appeal. We have some new models of schooling going on in our diocese. There's a new Montessori school affiliated with the diocese up in Tahoe Vista, St. Clair's. We have Valley at the Sacred Heart Academy in Dixon. So hope people will read about that. Of course, Cristo Rey High School has been going for quite a while now. And also have some fun little feature about, and you've had some of you had the winners on in the speech contest. Yeah, didn't they give all their speeches on the radio?
Yes, they did. Awesome. And then they gave a presentation for the whole pastoral staff at lunchtime, and oh boy, they were.
And I was that was my first time in doing the photos for this story with our photographer Steve was able to. That was the first time I was able to hear the finalists at the speech contest. It was at your parish,
yes,
St. James.
Yes, it was St. James.
Yeah.
Indeed. So. Julie, always a pleasure.
Okay, thank you so much for the time.
Yes, you too.
Okay.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showed that God is love and God is just.